We reached the sledge port at 83 North at 2 in the morning, which only meant that the sun was slightly lower in the sky than usual. The slit road debouched into a plateau of pack ice a mile or two wide, and somewhat lower than the surrounding ice, so that it felt like being on the floor of a large meteorite crater. Here and there, housing modules rose on stilts that could be moved and adjusted when the ice flowed under them. The Drummonds tended to congregate around these. Each was the headquarters of a different scrap dealer, and the drivers would hustle from one to the next, trying to get the best prices for their loads. Other structures served as hostels, eateries, or bordellos. The place was dominated by the sledge train itself. The first time I saw this, with the low sun behind it, I mistook it for a factory. The locomotive looked like one of those city-eating scrap processors, a power plant and a village of housing modules built on a bridge that spanned the interval between two colossal tracks. In train behind it were half a dozen sledges, each built on parallel runners that rode in the ruts of packed snow laid down by the locomotive's treads. The first of these was built to carry shipping containers. They were stacked four high, and an ungainly crane on wheels was laboring to begin a fifth layer. Behind it were a few sledges that simply consisted of great open boxes. Another crane, equipped with pincers easily big enough to snatch both of our vehicles at the same time, was clawing tangles of scrap metal from a pile on the snow and dropping them into these with heart-stopping crashes. The last sledge in the train was a flatbed, a mobile parking lot about half full of loaded Drummonds. We spent a while blundering around, but from having talked to Drummond operators at roadside stops, we had a general notion of how the place worked and some good suggestions on how not to behave. From Simon's research, we already knew that another sledge train had departed 2 days earlier, and that the one we were looking at would continue loading for another few days. Getting about was a hazard, because there were no established rights of way. Drummonds and fetches just moved in straight lines toward whatever their jumped-up drivers wanted to reach. So we tended to use our vehicles even for short movements. We found the office on stilts that booked places on the flatbed and arranged to have both of our vehicles loaded upon it. But we paid a little extra to get Gunnell's fetch situated at the edge rather than in the middle. That way, by deploying planks as ramps, we were able to get the three-wheeler on and off at will. It then became our means of moving around the sledge port, though it could only take two at a time, and so at any given moment, three of us would be marooned. So we rented one of the housing modules on the locomotive and marooned ourselves there. It was cheap. The toilet was a hole in the floor, covered when not used, by a trap door weighed down with slugs of scrap iron so that Arctic gales wouldn't blow it open. A few trips up and down the sledge train in the three-wheeler sufficed to stock our little house with the rations and other goods we had packed into the fetches, as well as a surprisingly comprehensive arsenal of projectile and edged weapons. Ulasitar and Gunnelio Craid might disagree about religion, but in their relationship to arms, they were the same mind in two different bodies. They even used the same types of cases to store their guns and the same boxes for ammunition. Many at the sledge port carried weapons openly, and there was a place at the edge of town where people would go out and discharge weapons into the encircling ice wall just to pass the time. On the whole, though, the place was more orderly and predictable than the territory we had spent the last week driving through. As I was coming to understand, it had to be thus because it was a place of commerce. Once we were settled in, Simon and I took the three-wheeler and made the rounds of bars and brothels, just to confirm that Orlo wasn't in any of them. Cord clambered around on the locomotive, admiring its workings, and Yule followed her. He claimed to be as interested in such things as Cord, but to me it was obvious that he expected she'd be raped if she went out alone.